Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael Pina. Today, I am Rohan Nadkarni, and I'm joined by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer. She says he looks like Usher when he's trapping in the rain. Please welcome Chris Herring to Open Floor. Chris, how's it going, my man?
What? I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, man. Dude, you're not a fan of Baca Not Nice? What's up? No love for Baca?
It's not about not having love. Having love, it's more that I was caught off guard, but I'm good.
Dude, that's what I'm going for here. I'm good, man. Can I embarrass you for a second? A little bit?
Sure. Sure.
I just want you to know I've been like reading Chris Herring's work for years, going back to your time at 538. I feel like I've been listening to you on podcasts for years. Always look forward to when you're on Zach Lowe. And now here I am sitting in the podcast chair across from you. So I'm really excited, man. I feel like I don't think we've done one yet. That's just me and you. And here we go. Get to talk.
You're right.
For a little bit.
We had one we were supposed to do, and I think something came up. You and I were going to kind of tag team the podcast where we had Miren Fader on to talk to her about the Giannis book. So this is cool for me too. I appreciate it. You know, I've got so much respect for the work you do and have for a long time. So it's cool to do this.
An incentive for people who listen to this podcast, but maybe don't watch us on YouTube. I think you're going to want to see how Chris's traps look today. I mentioned before we started, it looks like he's been working out. So just a little something for our fans if they want to check us out on YouTube. Speaking of our listeners, thank you to everyone who engages with this show. Thank you for sending us tweets, DMs, etc. We love when people are engaging with the work that we do. So in that spirit, please keep those emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. We love all your emails, guys, so keep them coming. Chris, there's a ton of stuff we got to get to today. Kind of a busy time in the association, as they say. I want to start. I think you and I are both on the same page about this like weird bit of news that came out this morning, and that I don't think either of us really believe it is something that's going to happen. But Shams Charani of The Athletic floating out this morning that the Celtics have maybe been involved in trade talks with the Sixers for Ben Simmons. The Sixers allegedly only want to do the trade if they can get Jaylen Brown back. In the same way that I only want a wife if it's Rihanna. Do you think Pina's life flashed before his eyes when he saw that there was a potential Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons rumor?
Probably. Mine would. but I'm also of the exact same opinion that you are, that it's very nice to want things in life. It's nothing wrong with wanting things in life. It doesn't mean you're going to have them. Certainly, I mean, it would be like walking up to a Tesla dealership and offering them like, I was about to say a $5 bill. That's not fair, you know, for a car. It doesn't mean you're going to walk out of there with the Tesla.
It's like, here's my car that can't go over 50 miles per hour. Give me your Tesla for it. Yeah.
Right. It just isn't going to work that way. And, you know, it also just... I'll put it this way. It struck me as even silly to have their two names in the same sentence. But Nikias Duncan, my buddy over at Basketball News, he tweeted that he actually doesn't think it's a bad, like, it works for both teams. So like, maybe I'm missing an aspect of it because I respect him a great deal. He knows that. You know, maybe it's almost too simplistic to just say that it makes no sense for Boston. You know, just kind of apples to apples, oranges to oranges, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. The way I see it, Jaylen Brown's a fine defender. He's a fine offensive player. Maybe they do clash a little bit between him and Tatum, or the idea that it doesn't leave enough offense for everybody else. And so if you're really, really trying to get away from that and trying to infuse some ball movement into your offense, maybe Simmons makes sense and maybe you don't fall off much, or you maybe even improve a little bit on defense. But I feel like you could potentially get more for him than that.
Yeah.
I remember when me and Michael were talking about trade possibilities for Dame, and I think we, you know, he just kind of gave me a blank slate and he said, you create whatever trade packages you want to for him. Who would you potentially move, or what would you actually be intrigued by? And I was thinking like Boston could potentially get in that conversation with like Jaylen and some other pieces for Dame. I mean, I think that's who you would want to someone of that caliber you would want to trade before you would talk about Simmons. I think he'll be there if you want to get him, you know, for something that expensive that costs.
Exactly. Him. Yeah. To me, the only reason Boston would ever make a trade like this, and again, we don't want to get too deep into it. To me, the only reason Boston would ever make a trade like this is if there's some kind of chemistry thing between Brown and Tatum that we don't necessarily know about, or maybe the front office feels like one of them is holding the other back, et cetera. But I'm with you. I mean, if you're going to trade Jaylen Brown, I think you could do better than Ben Simmons, frankly. When we had Jaylen Brown ranked higher than Ben Simmons on our top 100, I think you could get multiple good players back in return for Jaylen Brown. Like, if for any reason he was on the trading block, I think you could do a lot better. I will say, you know, a couple years ago, I gave Brad Stevens the nickname the Bhagwan. I don't know if you've seen Wild Wild Country on Netflix or are familiar with Osho, but, you know, Brad's like their cult leader in Boston, you know, the head of the Democratic People's Republic of Boston. They love him. They'll do whatever Brad says. So I kind of hope he makes the trade just to see the cognitive dissonance of the Boston fans who've been killing Simmons for years, to see what our buddy PETA does about it. So I'm rooting for it in terms of chaos, but I'm with you in terms of, you know, not really a move that makes sense, at least to us on the court. But, you know, you mentioned Nekias Duncan. He hosts the Dunker Spot podcast. He's promised a breakdown of why he thinks it works, so we'll have to check that out.
I'm going to look at it because, I said, I trust him to have an interesting insight that I haven't even thought about. So if he says that he sees it being potentially smart, then I trust him.
I'm willing to hear it out.
It's probably not something I would do, but, yeah, I trust him.
Chris, more news that came out late last week, and there's no real easy way to segue about this. Last week on this podcast, you and Mike discussed the Robert Sarver story as it relates to the Suns and their toxic workplace culture, alleged, I guess we should say. More allegations now. This was kind of a weird story in a media sense in terms of how it broke. I think it was late Thursday night last week or late one night last week. The Athletic reporting that the Blazers have launched their own investigation with an outside firm into their general manager, Neil Olshey, and the workplace culture that he's cultivated there. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports followed up with reporting about more allegations of a toxic workplace culture. Obviously, the players and coaches have not said much about it. It sounds trite to just say your thoughts on this, but I'm just curious what your reaction was. It just was kind of a strange story in terms of at least, you know, when it came out and the timing, et cetera. And normally you don't have the teams kind of getting out in front as the way the Blazers did on this one.
Yeah. I mean, it's very strange on a lot of different levels. In the same way, it's been strange now for each of these stories, the Sarver one as well.
Yeah.
Where there was reporting, if you would call it that, I wouldn't really call it that, but, you know, there was some stuff floating around about that weeks before, and obviously the Suns put out a preemptive statement about that, which was really odd, and it's like, okay, you're denying something that hasn't even been written about yet, which that I've seen that happen before, and it, you know, shout out to Baxter Holmes for that story, but he wrote a story a year and a half, 2 years ago, whenever it was, on Magic Johnson. And that story kind of dribbled out a little bit too beforehand. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of strange that that happened, where he's writing stories that at some point you have to ask the organization for a response and stuff is going to get out. Now, I say all that to say this, even Friday morning, and you were part of this text message chain, like some of us were discussing some stuff that I guess not I heard, but within our group, like about the idea that something may be coming down and trying to kind of figure out what each of us knew or how many of us had ties to Portland that we could kind of make use of that to potentially report something. So it was starting to circulate a little bit Friday morning. I think the timing of it was that it came out late Friday night. It's like a really weird Friday news dump in that sense that it came out like as I was going to bed Friday night.
Yeah, it was late on the West Coast.
It was very, very late. And so it's hard. And beyond that, I think what's even stranger about this, I mean, it was one thing for Baxter's story that had all these details and allegations. The Olshey thing, essentially, I mean, you know, I know Shams had it as far as putting something up, but it was, you know, I'm sure most people that clicked the link probably felt kind of
where the details, what's going on. It was so vague.
It was like a burger with like a bottom bun and a top bun and nothing inside of it, like there wasn't but I mean it's very bare bones because like all we know is that there's an investigation that's going to happen, but we don't know anything about why definitively. Again, I think some of us have kind of heard stuff, but we don't know exactly
Haynes had a little bit more detail, I think, in terms of it sounded like a workplace thing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just, it's kind of vague, you know, anytime you're talking about someone's career, which I certainly have been critical of Neil Olshey over the years, but this is a totally different sort of thing. Now, what I will say, and I think as much as I can say, if it turns out that there's something to this and it's to the point where he needs to be out of the job or that they remove him from the job because of it, I will say that I already had a lot of concerns, and you and I have talked about this on the podcast, off the podcast, about the Chauncey Billups hire, and a lot of people obviously had concerns about that, and a lot of people had questions about the way that was done and the idea that, you know, once that became clear that it was happening, Neil Olshey was sitting there in the press conference next to Chauncey, which Twitter has, you know, looked at and parsed ad nauseum at this point about the idea that anytime someone was asking an uncomfortable question about the, you know, the alleged sexual assault that Chauncey was in, that Neil Olshey was grabbing the glass of water and drinking it kind of to signal to the PR staff, like, cut off the questions if we start getting questions like these. That was the way it looked to a lot of people. So I say all this, say all that to say this. Neil Olshey basically assured everyone that we did our due diligence on this subject.
Yeah, he said, trust me, I'm not going to release the investigation. Yeah.
Right. So where am I going with this? I guess what I'm saying is, like, if he ends up having real ugly stuff in his closet and it comes out that he had real ugly stuff in his closet and he was leading this search, and who knows, again, who knows exactly what the investigation is for and the specifics of it, but if it turns out that he had ugly stuff in his closet and then he made a hire that was controversial, that people had a lot of questions about how much due diligence did the Blazers actually do on this subject, it has the potential to look way, way, way worse in a way that, frankly, to me would be unforgivable. But again, there's so many ifs there that I don't want to completely say that, you know, that it's inappropriate or that it was any more inappropriate. I don't know. There might be nothing to it.
Right.
And even if I have, you know, even if I've got criticisms of how someone has done their job as far as wins and losses, whether someone deserves to be in that seat anymore, that's fine. I can set that aside. I just want to say that if there's stuff that comes out of it, and it's real tangible stuff and troubling stuff, like it seems like there might be with the Sarver stuff, then it just looks even worse from Portland's standpoint. But it's but there's too many ifs there to really pin anything specific. So I want to make that part clear.
For sure. And I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the Chauncey stuff. That's something I've had conversations with people outside of this podcast. I mean, it's going to be really, really disconcerting for him to have come out that boldly at that press conference in like he's not aware of the cultural shift that's gone on in this, in our society over the last few years, to say, no, trust me. And then to have a story like this come out. I'll speak broadly here for a second. Forget about Olshey. Forget about even Sarver for a second. First of all, just, you know, I think you and I could agree, like, commend the people who are willing to speak up and speak out anywhere, you know, against abuse, toxic workplace, et cetera. That's not easy to do. There's a reason why these stories get swept under the rug. It's not easy to speak out against people who have a lot of power, who control your career, et cetera.
Sure.
Here's what I'll say about the NBA, because some people are saying, you know, is this going to be enough to get Sarver out, et cetera? Can they, you know, are they going to Sterling him, Donald Sterling, you know, make him sell the team, et cetera? The NBA is in an interesting position here because they need to figure out what their line is. They need to figure out what is PR and what are their league values. Because I think it's fair to say, broadly speaking, these issues, these allegations that we're seeing pop up in the NBA, the issues that, you know, Sports Illustrated has reported on with the Dallas Mavericks, this isn't an NBA problem. This is the problem with corporate culture in America. This is the problem when you get really, really rich people with ungodly amounts of power. I mean, we see this across our society. You know, we have owners who donate to anti-LGBTQ causes. We have owners with connections to you know, some of the worst parts of the Trump administration, et cetera. I mean, look at what the DeVos family has done. You know, the league can, let's say the league even kicked out Robert Sarver because they found truth, smoking gun to these allegations, et cetera. Is that going to fix the NBA overnight? Is it going to fix the NBA to get Sarver out and bring in another billionaire, presumably, to own the team? This idea that we can identify the quote unquote bad actors or bad apples, I just don't know how realistic that is. And I'm not saying that that's a reason for the league to you know, kind of wash their hands of it or throw their hands up and say, hey, we can't do anything. But I do think there needs to be an awareness that this is corporate culture in America, frankly. This is why we've seen, you know, whether it's the Me Too movement or the state of people who feel comfortable coming out talking about, you know, workplace abuse, toxicity, whatever you want to call it. This is not just unique to the NBA. This is a bigger problem. And I think if the league is serious about this, then it really needs to have a much bigger discussion than just how do we force out the guy that had the story that's too hard to move out from. Because it's not that I think every owner has, you know, maybe the kind of skeletons in their closet that Sarver does, but I don't want to get too kind of galaxy brain about this. And I don't think people are going to come to this podcast for a discussion about late stage capitalism or whatever, but I'll say this. There's something to be said about, there's an argument to be had, and I think it's a conversation that people like you and I probably have amongst our friends, but you look at the Suns, for example. This is going to sound kind of like crazy to say, but it's real easy to get rid of the guy who has said the N-word when he clearly should not. It's real easy to get rid of that guy. But, you know, if we want to talk about people who are doing like material harm, like ESPN has done a story about the political donations of owners in the NBA. Like, what's the line for the NBA? Like, what are your real values? Because if you are saying we want to stop, we care about social justice, we care about equality, we care about Black Lives Matter, we're going to put it on our jerseys, put it on our courts, I think you have to have a real conversation about who is doing more material harm. And that's not to say the people who have experienced, you know, the alleged abuse from Robert Sarver, like, don't deserve a better workplace. Of course they do. It's just, is it enough to just kick that one guy out? I'm not sure. And I think that's a problem the league is going to have to wrestle with eventually, because if it says it's kicking out Robert Sarver for its values, then I think they need to be challenged on what those values are, because there are a lot of people who I think are doing, you could argue, are doing even more material harm than him. It's just happening in a much less obvious and explicit way.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with mentioning the Magic and the DeVos family. If you want to make it political, you can do that. I mean, we're talking about, you know, education secretary and all sorts of other things. Aside from gay rights in this country, aside from any other number of things, that's very real stuff. And Michael and I touched on this a little bit Friday when we talked about Sarver. There were some elements of the Sterling stuff that when it came up, I'm sure there were some people that were like, oh, now we care about this. Right. Because, again, there was a smoking gun aspect to it. And Michael and I talked about this a little bit Friday as well. With Sarver, some of the stuff that was reported in Baxter Stories, like, you could kind of see that sort of thing happening. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even surprising. You could almost hear Sarver's voice in terms of being able to picture certain aspects of that. Not to say that everything that was alleged in the story is true. I don't know that. I'm not saying that. But I mean, there's a reason that certain owners have a reputation in the NBA. Some of them are just kind of more wild personalities. But again, these are people that, to some extent, probably feel very entitled. Mm-hmm. Feel like they can say whatever they want to whoever is in the room. Can say whatever they want no matter who's in the room with them and how far away they are or how well they know the people. And in some cases have been sued over some really ugly stuff. And it's very clear where they stand politically, which maybe at one time the idea of being on one side of the aisle versus the other wasn't as problematic as it is when there's someone who's running for office that is very clearly racist to a lot of people, that it comes off that way, that a lot of people in the country feel that way. So yeah, there is going to be a spot where it I don't know where you draw that line. But I think the odd part of it is that all of a sudden, if an owner was kicked out, the league would say someone has a problematic history of XYZ, mm-hmm. and will act as if it's something that was long overdue. But then if it was long overdue, then like why the hell were they still
right.
running a team, owning a team? So there are a lot of aspects. I know exactly what you mean by that. And, mm-hmm. and I guess what Michael and I said Friday specifically is that I said the league is very, very liberal. I think that that's obvious as far as the players. You're dealing with a league that's very international. You're dealing with a league that is mostly black, mostly young men, very young men. But the players are that way.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the coaches, a lot of whom are liberal as well. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And then you've got management, and then you've got owners.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to me how so much of the NBA has been able to skate on this idea that the league is so liberal when the people that make it go from mm-hmm. a money standpoint are not. And I mean, it's just clear as day in some examples, even the biggest market with the Knicks, like, yep. I mean, Jim Dolan hasn't made it a secret necessarily that he's a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Okay. But there are aspects where that shows through sometimes, where the idea that every team, and maybe this matters, maybe it doesn't. To some people it doesn't. To a lot of fans, they don't care. But when every team in the league puts out essentially a statement
mm-hmm.
regarding George Floyd, and I'm sure plenty of them made statements about Jacob Blake and everything else like that, and the Knicks are like the one team that doesn't.
Right.
And then it's like a 10-day process for them to put out one that even when the statement comes out, it doesn't say much. Okay. I mean, it's like, and it's people are needling them about that. I remember yeah. Howard in particular had pointed out, I think, that they hadn't put out one. And, you know, it might not be a big deal to some people. It may be a big deal to some people. Some people feel like it's just performative anyway.
Yeah.
But the fact that, like, you can't or won't even do that.
You can't even make a statement saying you condemn racism. The easiest layup in the world. Just we don't like racism.
I can't remember exactly what the statement eventually said when it came out, like, a week or 10 days later, whatever it was. But it was, like, that was something that I imagine from the top down they were told, no, we're not doing that. And it's just, again, like, it's just a mindset and it's a mentality of who owns the team. So, I mean, it is what it is. But, like, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. Like, there's some stuff that to me comes off as problematic. It's not nearly as problematic as like having a completely anti-gay stance on things. There are levels to it, but I do think that it is interesting that like we said, if something came up, if there was a smoking gun, the league would then take the stance that you know, we should have been done this.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not an all of a sudden sort of thing when someone's owned a team for 25 years or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in this Portland case as well, because I don't even know what the allegations are. So that'll dictate a lot of it, I guess.
Billionaires, they're not sending their best, you know, they're, I guess, let me put it that way. There's no easy way to now transition back to on the court stuff, but obviously there's a lot we want to talk about in terms of what's actually happening in the games right now. It's been a hell of a start to the season, man. I first of all, shout out to Eastern Conference basketball. As someone who grew up in the East, Chris, I mean, it's just great to see the revival of this once proud, great, beautiful conference. Lots of great teams up and down, but we're not going to start in the East. No. We're going to start out West with
that play action fake.
That play action fake that got you. That boot, that naked boot. I'm Peyton Manning running to the end zone. we're actually going to start with probably a much more disappointing team. They're currently sitting outside of the playoff picture in the Western Conference, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers. Couple bad losses since the last time you've heard this podcast, blowing yet another lead to the Oklahoma City Thunder, losing by double digits to a Portland team. Anthony Davis played only 7 minutes in that game. Russell Westbrook shot 1 of 13 from the field. LeBron James continues to miss time with a rectus abdominis strain. Bill Oram at The Athletic did a really interesting report. He talked to a former Lakers trainer who basically was giving an informed opinion about how long they think LeBron might miss time for. Chris, how do you feel about how this Lakers experiment has gone so far? Obviously, it's being pretty heavily tainted by LeBron's injury, but I would say a lot of our worst fears about this team have come through so far.
I mean, yeah, and it's fine to say tainted by the LeBron injury, which it has been to some extent. You know, maybe they're two or three games better if he's there. Maybe, you know, that's asking for a lot given the problems that exist on this team. But that, we got to stop thinking about LeBron as like the 30-year-old LeBron, the 28-year-old LeBron that never could get hurt. I mean, clearly, and it was interesting because last year when he had the leg injury, when he kind of essentially got tripped and had a really nasty fall and, you know, got kicked in the shin or whatever it was that he had. I can't remember at this point. But a lot of people were saying, oh, that was a freak thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but there was also a time in LeBron's career where, like, even freak things.
He absorbs that and dunks the next possession.
He was just robotic and it didn't matter. You know, I still remember the play where he got his nose broken and, like, finished through the contact and had an and one. And it's like, where did they make people like this? This is not – clearly wasn't made in America, this product, because too strong.
Yeah.
too good of a product. So, I mean, there was a time in his career where he could just, you know, blow through anything and it wasn't going to hurt him. Or if it did, it wasn't going to keep him out for more than a game or two. He literally had never missed really more than a week because of any one injury. I think he had that one time where he rested with the Cavs. So –
he just took a 2-week break, yeah.
Right, it's sabbatical, yeah. Mid-season sabbatical. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about here is, like, I think we've, you know, whether – I never felt like there's going to be one moment where it all just kind of went away. If there was, maybe it was it the hamstring that he had with his first year with the Lakers where he was just
the groin,
out
for, yeah, he was just out. Groin. And he kept missing time. People thought he'd come back quick. And
right. And even, you know, once he was ready to, because I think by the time he came back, they only had like a game or two left to spare as far as, you know, the playoff race. And so that might have been the moment where we really lost him as far as, like, he's not injury prone anymore. And maybe it's not one massive injury that takes him out. It just might be the little aches and pains and the nicks and the hard falls that he takes that now what used to take him 12 minutes to recover from now takes 2 weeks and you have to be really careful about it. So I don't know, but that's just kind of a part of it now. But aside from that, and aside from Davis, who might be even kind of more fragile than LeBron is despite his age difference, I mean, man, it's just even when they're healthy – there are so many plays where you watch AD and LeBron run a pick and roll and there's three people guarding those two and Russ's guy is one of the three and Russ is just standing there. I mean, I've never heard the phrase like Westbrook Island, but there'd be times where Russ is the only one standing on that thing. Like a whole lot of vacation space there for him.
Just, you know, the Castaway reboot, the revival. Yeah.
And then they throw him the basketball, and that's basically Wilson. Wilson!
Hey, Wilson, there we go. How about that?
Shout out. We need to get a sponsorship
if
we're going to be shouting them out like that, especially with the nasty PR they've been taking this year with the basketball. So, I mean, it's just it that doesn't look right. It's a team that looks completely different than I would have guessed. I would have thought this is an old team that is going to – struggle on offense because of the Westbrook stuff and is going to play slowly because they're old. They're a team that actually, if I'm remembering correctly, has been okay on that side of the floor, but has not been the greatest defensively. And they played at the fastest pace in the NBA, which is just like bizarre and backwards to think about, but also seems unsustainable given how old they are and given how banged up they're going to be. Anthony Davis, like, can't do anything without getting hurt. Like, goes for a rebound, his finger gets jammed, like, you know, 7 minutes here. I feel like he's fragile every year as far as us being worried that he's going to get hurt. But I just feel like this year, and maybe it's just because we already know LeBron's missing time and because we already know they're going to be, like, behind the eight ball at times this year with this roster, it just feels flimsy. And, like, Carmelo was – the best shooter in the NBA for a couple weeks, and you know you can't rely on that for the whole season.
This is a lot of Carmelo Anthony for the Lakers now.
Yeah, another guy that, you know, by the way, came in the league the same year LeBron did. So, like, you know, can probably stay healthy. He's been a durable player over his career, but, like, you aren't asking that much of him. And the teams he's played with have never played at paces like this. They just haven't had to do that since he was early in his career. So we'll see, man. I mean, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't – I mean, if LeBron is there, then they'll patch up a lot of this stuff. But you're going to have to wonder and worry, like, how long can he go without getting hurt? Can they play at this pace with him without him getting hurt? And the defense, you know, at some point has to be better so that you're not forcing a team like that to score as much as they might need to.
I was shocked to look up that their defensive rating is actually 13th in the NBA, which is way better than I expected them to be. But it's also a big drop from number one where they finished last year. And that was even with the injuries to LeBron and AD and bringing in Andre Drummond to the middle of the season to run the Drummond experiment. So the fact that they finished number one in defense last year to me is a testament to the system that Frank Vogel built and the culture he built with that team. And then it just, he had it all ripped away from him this summer. And I'm really worried for Vogel because he kind of got that like weird fake extension where it's like, we'll give you another year.
I hated that.
And, you know, he's being asked to rejigger this roster for the third year in a row. And I think it's a significantly worse team than they had at the start of last season. I mean, we could talk about, you know, they underachieved last year, but I mean, that had way more to do with injuries in the roster construction. I think we're looking at the Westbrook trade as like one of the biggest missteps a GM has made in LeBron's career. I mean, I think that is look at how good the Wizards have been. They're 7-3. They're one of the best teams in the East. All of those guys, Kuzma, Harrell, KCP, have been playing incredibly well for them. I mean, how desperately could the Lakers use three solid rotation players right now, especially two guys, KCP and Kuzma, who can play really good defense? I mean, that Westbrook trade has the potential to really just derail, I think, the last few years of LeBron's career here. And I don't want to keep piling on Westbrook, but one of the justifications you heard for the trade was they need someone who can give LeBron a break, someone who can handle the ball, someone who can carry the team. If LeBron does get hurt, if he is aging, if he is going to miss 3 weeks a season, and that's just not been the case. He has not been able to carry the team like that. He's not that player. Mike's mentioned this many times on this podcast, the Wizards in Westbrook's solo minutes last year were not very good. He needed Beal on the court to be successful. And now, even though he has Anthony Davis, it's just, it's not working. I honestly think they need to be in a little bit of panic mode right now. Last year, I kept saying they got, you know, unless LeBron is missing time in the playoffs or AD, which ended up happening, they don't need to be terrified. I think this is different this season. I think they're in panic mode right now. I don't think getting Trevor Ariza, Talen Horton-Tucker, or Kendrick Nunn back is going to dramatically change the floor or ceiling of this team. They are relying so much on Carmelo Anthony for offense in a way that none of his like the Blazers did not, the Thunder, even when the Thunder had the quote unquote big three of Melo, Paul George, and Russ, they were not relying on Melo like this. God, that feels like a lifetime ago.
It does.
Yeah. But I think that they got to be in a little bit of panic mode right now. I don't see the answers for this team on this roster. And I'm worried for Frank Vogel because I think it's going to be very easy to make him the scapegoat. When I think the front office, I don't know how you justify that Westbrook trade when you see how good the Wizards have been playing. I just think they completely dropped the ball with the construction of this team in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, there's a larger question to be asked of Russ. And I mean, you had a lot of people that probably think a little bit more along the lines that we do as far as utilizing data as part of what we do, a pretty decent portion of what we do as far as player evaluation. So Russ went from Oklahoma City to Houston, and he did that thing. And we watched Chris Paul. Now, granted, you know, I was looking, Houston won more games than Oklahoma City, but not by a ton. I think it was like 4 or 5 games. And also, Houston had both Russ and James Harden. So I think they were like a 49-win team. Oklahoma City still won like 44 with just Chris Paul, and obviously Shea was there as well, and Schroeder, but still, like, a team that everybody kind of wrote off. Not me. I remember saying, like, even when that team, just in the offseason, I was like, Oklahoma City is still probably going to be a playoff team or close to it.
No one thought they'd be that good.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody did. Chris Paul was one of the best fourth quarter scorers in the league. You know, it seemed like he kind of took it personally, the idea that people were calling him washed, and, you know, he played a lot of games that season. And so people were like, it was one of those, like, what have I done sort of moments, as far as, like, you thought that Russ was going to be the guy. You traded away still pretty good Chris Paul if he was just healthy. So there was that. So, like, I think people looked at that. They went from talking about Chris Paul's contract being untradeable to then saying maybe Russ's is. Russ sticks there 1 year, and then obviously everything is being blown up. You send him to D.C. He goes to D.C., and we're all kind of thinking, like, okay, so he gets traded for John Wall, who his status is probably along the lines of Russ's, except worse, because he's coming off injury. But and we're all kind of looking at ourselves saying, like, that doesn't really make Washington much better, does it? It's probably about a lateral move, maybe a little bit worse, maybe a little bit better, at least a healthier player. He's there. They look like ass to start the year. And that, and I, as close as I really come to writing people off, I kind of wrote Russ off a little bit by, you know, I had statistics laying out that Blake Griffin essentially was one of the quickest eroding players in, like, NBA history, particularly for someone that was not very old by NBA standards, like 31, however old Blake Griffin was last year. Blake, obviously, when he went to Brooklyn, looked different. And, you know, there was a little bit of, like, I'm sure he was playing harder. I'm sure he was a little bit more rested. His role, his task was easier. Russ, on the other hand, was putting up numbers that, like, looked like, man, this guy might be out of the league in the next couple years if he's going to play like this. He started going to the basket more. He stopped. He put down the jump shot for a little bit. And they recovered enough, and he looked better and helped get them to the playoffs. You know, not much in the playoffs, but got them there. So it was interesting because it was one of those things where, again, he looked fine when Beal was there, when he decided he was going to play the right way and go to the basket, not settle for jumpers. But still, you know, maybe he was better than John Wall, but, like, it wasn't something that clearly elevated Washington.
I mean, it got them to the play-in. That was about it.
Right. So now Washington trades him. We're all stunned that the Lakers even want him, given all the stuff you said about where LeBron's at in his career, given that this is like a championship contending team already with depth. And that's a big part of, you know, it was like AD, LeBron, and then their depth. They're like their three best players to me. So then you trade for like a third star in quotation marks. You know, I've said this till the cows come home. He's not a guy that is like a Klay Thompson sort of star alongside KD and Steph, or a Ray Allen sort of star alongside Pierce and KG. He can't shoot from out there. So if you leave him open, those other two guys make you pay for it. Russ, that's kind of the default defense you want to play with him at the three-point line anyways, to leave him open. He's not setting screens. He's not cutting to the basket. And he's not really defending consistently either. So, like, I just didn't understand it from that standpoint. But I say all that to say what you brought up earlier is that now Washington, like, looks – a lot of people kind of picked them not as a dark horse to win the East, but to, like, do damage in the East to some extent, because they thought that the depth would serve that team better than Russ would as a second star. And guess what? Like, Beal's not even playing that well yet.
Right.
And they have a really good record, and there's a lot of stuff about their stats so far that looks pretty sustainable. So I don't know, man. I mean, I set all that up to say that, like, at some point there's a conversation to be had about Russ, that a lot of people have been saying this anyway for a while, that statistically, yeah, he does enough statistically to where he looks really valuable, but I don't know how much he helps you, or maybe he's like a floor raiser but not really a ceiling raiser.
Right.
And I don't even know what he's doing for your floor at a certain point. Like, I think he could potentially kind of break your floor, collapse your floor, if you've got guys that need to just kind of hit the next level or help them hit the next level. I don't know that he's doing that with AD and LeBron. Certainly not yet.
Right. I mean, I'm not the first person to come up with this idea. I think he needs to be an overqualified sixth man at this point. I don't know that we can beat around the bush. If you look at what Jordan Clarkson and Tyler Hero are doing, you know, coming in off the bench. They kind of get going against the backups, but can he be that kind of player if he can't shoot? Here's what I'll say. Now, Harrell is probably the only guy that maybe doesn't qualify for this. If you look at the guys they lost from their championship team, Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Alex Caruso. We can't forget about Caruso, who they let walk to the Bulls in one of just the all-time, you know, financial bonehead decisions. They don't want to pay deep into the tax. You're the LA Lakers. Guess what? You pay as much as it takes. You keep a guy like Caruso. I don't know that there's anyone on the Lakers roster outside of LeBron and AD that I'd rather have than one of those four guys if I'm trying to win a championship this season. And that includes Russ. And Harrell's maybe the only guy because he's playing great right now, but he's kind of a regular season, you know, he's like your fifth starter. He's just going to eat up innings, whatever. It's a little bit different, but Caruso I'd rather have. Our producer Shell bringing up a great point. Harrell was not on the championship team. Good producing, Shelby. Shout out to you. I snuck that in there just to see if you would catch it. And it turns out you are listening. Way to go, Shelby. I mean, in a playoff series, I want someone like Caruso next to AD, next to LeBron and AD. I want someone like KCP. I want someone like Kuzma. You wrote a great piece at the start of the season, but there's just diminishing return. Like the Russell Westbrook paradox is you can't have him as your third option because he can't shoot. But if he's your first option, you're not a championship team. So what is he? I don't know. But their team is just a kind of a jumbled mess right now. And I don't see the improvement coming from within.
I mean, they at least had an identity before. And right. I now their identity is like this team that can take 20-point leads on Oklahoma City and then lose it. You know, I made the comparison on Twitter. And it was crazy, too, because – maybe I'm getting really old. Like it's really tough for me to stay awake for these West Coast games now. So I'll make it through the first three and a quarter quarters, you know, maybe the first 2-3 minutes of the fourth. And I'm like, I got to go to bed because I've got early calls to make. I've got stuff to grade. I've got a story to try to write. I've got meetings, whatever. And it's like, I don't want to be asleep on those. So let me at least go to bed and I'll watch the rest of it tomorrow, or I'll catch up on what the final was and then figure out whether it was worth it to watch the last 8 minutes. And I did that with the Thunder Lakers game. And I tweeted at one point because they had already started to give up that really big lead they took against Oklahoma City. And so it already started to feel like deja vu. And so I tweeted something like about how the Lakers, they eat their meals really quickly, but then it comes back up. And then people like pulled the tweet back up after they lost. And they're like, well, you do know the regurgitation issues start to come up a lot more once you get old. And like the idea of, and the Lakers are an old team. So whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, it's at this point, man, I just feel like they had an identity before. I don't really know what it is now. It's obviously going to be impossible to figure out what it is until you get LeBron back, until AD is there consistently. This will be – actually, it's not, because look at how they're playing right now. If AD's not there and it's just LeBron, I don't think this team would make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if it's – you know, if LeBron's out and it's just going to be AD and Russ, like, they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, I think, again, you got to figure out how you're going to do it if it's all three of them. But if it's just Russ and it's Russ like becoming half of the equation as one of the big three, and it's just one of those guys out of the picture, I don't trust him in that role.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it could work better in some ways, but I just don't see it. I just don't want him being. And it's crazy because the sixth man role theoretically should work, second line defenses and stuff like that. But there's something that scares me about Russ just kind of having complete control of everything too. So the point that you brought up that I'd mentioned before about the idea of like, he's not good enough to be your best player.
Yeah.
Maybe against benches he can be, but he turns the ball over so much. So who knows?
It's, I just want to, you know, that scene in Good Will Hunting where Robin Williams is telling Matt Damon, it's not your fault. That's me to Frank Vogel right now. I just want to give him a hug. Like, it's not your fault.
I don't want that dude getting fired. I don't want him getting fired.
I think Vogel's done a great job, and I think he deserves more respect for what he's done with that team, especially last year having the number one defense. He's been great. And shouts to you, Frank. I think you're in a tough spot managing everything you have to manage. I want to move on to players who are actually playing well. I'm writing about this for Sports Illustrated this week, so I thought it'd be great to also talk about it on the podcast. So, Chris, I want to hear from you. We touched on this. This has been a good season of basketball. Like, there are a lot of good teams. Like, almost every team has been entertaining to watch. I mean, even the Thunder, who we all said were going to be awful coming into the season, have pulled off some crazy comeback wins. And I think the great players are playing great. So to that, I want to ask you, Chris, who are I kind of left this vague. I don't know if you got a just one, three, however many guys you have, but tell me your early season MVP candidates. We're about 10 games into the league right now. So with the caveat that this is really early, but, you know, if you were filling out a ballot right now, who are some guys that you want on there?
Well, I think my first guy is somebody that everybody has on their list, and I think I would – he's probably more of a revelation to me because I make a point to not watch – I can't watch summer – I'm, like, basketballed out by the time we get to summer league.
Oh, I don't watch summer league. I proudly tell people I don't watch summer league. I don't watch preseason.
And I don't watch much college aside from, like, Michigan, so I – you know, which is where I went to school. So I guess other people knew he was going to be good. Evan Mobley has been so much fun. And dominant is a strong word to use, but he's got stretches, man, where people can't get around this dude. Defensively, you know, Cleveland plays a really smart, you know, I made fun of Cleveland in the past for having too many bigs. And
we've all still made fun feels of like Cleveland they in do. The past, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, this seems to work because having Jared Allen back there gives you some bulk and some heft to be able to guard the bigger fives. And Mobley, you know, you don't really necessarily want him doing that. I think the guy's 215 pounds despite being like 7 feet tall. So, like, he's too small and too thin to do that, but is still a hell of a object to have to shoot over and to get around and try to throw a pass around. So, I mean, he gets his hands on so many passes, has a really soft, you know, touch on his shot. You know, they play basically a 3-2 zone, which is different, but they're already using him in the middle of it, which is brilliant and very smart. So I've just thoroughly enjoyed watching that dude play. Again, like, I know a lot of other people have known that, have noticed that. And obviously that's a big part of their turnaround. You know, maybe we'll get to it later in the show, but horrible news with Sexton and the idea that maybe he's got something wrong with the meniscus. We don't know how serious yet. It just was tweeted out before we hopped on the air. But Cleveland's been fun, and I think Mobley is a massive, massive, massive part of that. Crazy that he had 26 against the Knicks, and it wasn't like Rubio went for basically 40.
Right, yeah. So, and Rubio was nuts. So, Chris, I'm going to take responsibility for this because this is my fault. I put two questions on this outline that are very close together, which was who have you enjoyed watching, but who are also your MVP candidates? I was going to talk about my MVP candidates right now. Now, maybe Mobley is one for you. Maybe you're ready to put Mobley in the MVP talk. The fact that he's made Cleveland fun to watch cannot be disregarded. That is a Herculean effort right there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to throw an MVP candidate. I'm going to throw two MVP candidates in the mix right now, if you don't mind.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, number one, and I think this is actually a bigger deal than people realize, even though we all thought he was going to be great coming into this season. But that's Kevin Durant, who, you know, our buddy Mike wrote about him last week. It's a great story. You should check it out, especially what he's doing from the mid-range. But I don't even remember pre-Achilles Kevin Durant feeling as unfair as he feels this season. I don't know. I don't know who can guard him. In my mind, you need someone like Giannis, but you saw Giannis, you know, he didn't want to take on that one-on-one assignment and kind of mess up their team defense in that series. And I do think Giannis is better as a help defender than a one-on-one defender, as crazy as it sounds. But, I mean, you look at all the great defenders in this league, whether it's Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron, when he's really, really trying. I just don't know that they have the height to guard this guy. And right now he's rising up and shooting above everyone. He's leading the league in scoring. We all thought I think we all had hope, wishful thinking that he would be this good after the Achilles tear. But To me, I'm kind of blown away because it feels like he is at the height of his powers. And granted, I think being at Golden State, playing in that offense, playing with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson kind of muted him to a degree, which was, you know, a fear all of us had. But Chris, he's been really, really blowing me away. And we had him at number one on our top 100. I think you were the only one who put Giannis there, but we all agreed that they were kind of a 1A, 1B situation. It's not like I believe you had him at number two, so it's not like you're shocked about this, but he's been number one in a way that I didn't expect how great he's been to start this season.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to – I mean, Giannis has been fantastic too, so mm-hmm. it's not to take away from him. But, I was the one guy that voted Giannis one, and I think there was a little bit of a championship boost that I gave him, you know, to put him in that spot. But Durant, I mean, I think you raised the best point by saying that you don't even remember pre-Achilles Durant being this dominant and this hard to stop. I mean, it was really interesting matchup even yesterday watching Toronto try to kind of go at Durant mm-hmm. because, I mean, Toronto has maybe more Durant stopper type guys.
Right.
Not necessarily one guy that can or one guy that does or one guy that has a history of it, but they've got like seven Durant-sized guys that you could at least throw on him to try to stop him. And it just, I've made this analogy before, but it's like one of those Michael Jackson videos where he's got all these goons and then he just kind of kicks him in the face and does that tee hee little noise. Like Durant very much disposes of defenders in a sort of way where I think, what did he have yesterday? 31 on like 18 yeah. shots. It's just, I mean, it's disgusting. Like, I don't really know what you're supposed to do with that. But also, Kyrie has not played a minute. And Harden, you know, essentially is like Samson after a haircut, you know, with the free throw issue. Now, granted, Harden played well yesterday, but, I mean, he really is 25% of his offense has basically been yeah. thrown out the window with these calls and the way that they're being called. And in some cases, like, he's clearly being fouled. And I think the league is just really regressing all the way to the mean with basically what they feel like he should be getting free throw wise, and they're going to have to kind of adjust that a little bit and maybe be a little bit more lenient with his calls. But I mean, Durant hasn't rendered it meaningless or moot as far as those problems, but for what they looked like at the very beginning of the season to now, they're a hard offense to guard still, even with those problems, and Durant is the key reason why. And I mean, they still could easily finish with the top seed, yeah. which would be saying a lot given yeah. what they're missing and given how the season started.
They started slow, but I mean, they've quickly gotten up to 7-3. I want to hop back to our favorite players we've been watching in a second, because okay. there's a lot of guys I want to mention. But let me give you kind of my fake MVP ballot right now, and you okay. just tell me kind of your immediate reaction to it. So I have Durant number one.
Okay.
I got to have my homer pick Jimmy Butler at number two. I'm putting Steph Curry at three. Gobert at four. There's a lot of Gobert disrespect on this podcast. I'm going to put Gobert at four.
Okay.
And then just to give him a shout, because the Jazz continue to be a great regular season team, and he continues to bring it on the defensive end, although they went on a huge comeback against the Heat with Gobert off the floor, which was kind of funny to watch. And then number five, I'm going to put Ja Morant. That, I think that's kind of my working top five right now. Okay. I think he deserves – the Grizzlies have kind of cooled off a little bit, him too, scoring-wise, yeah. since the start of the year. But I think he can pick it back up. Tell me what you think of that.
It's interesting. I would have to delve into some of the advanced numbers a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. Ja has looked the part. I'll give yeah. him that. I saw a stat yesterday and actually prompted me to tweak my power rankings a little mm-hmm. bit this week, because I think I saw something about how the Grizzlies and maybe one other team were like the only two teams that had a 500 record or better with like a negative net rating, and their net rating is like really off. So I don't know. They've had a really nice start to the season, obviously, and they've won some games that I don't think people thought that they would get. But if they're primed for like a regression, that doesn't mean it should be on Ja's mm-hmm. expense, at his expense, but. No, I mean, those are all names that make sense to me. You want me to give you mine? I didn't really order mine at all.
That's okay. That's totally cool. Could. No, that's totally cool.
So I had some overlap. I obviously had KD and Jimmy on my list. I think Jimmy, it's weird because like you can see that it's very much like you know, Jimmy's always been for his career. You can see the impact he's making, but it's not like, I think it would probably be a little bit difficult to make a statistical case.
Right.
His numbers are pretty much in line with what they've always been, a little bit higher here, a little bit higher
the
there.
The efficiency has been really good.
Right. The efficiency has been crazy, in part because he's just taking so many fewer threes, which is something that he struggles at a little bit. He's not getting to the line at a crazy, crazy rate for him. He's always been good at that. And he's been, you know, still like a bit of a menace on defense, which is what he's always been. So I think for him, if he's getting it at this stage, it's because the team is doing so well.
I also think
that
his case is kind of like best player on one of the best seeds argument.
Sure. And that's fine. I have no problem with that, especially if they're going to finish with the best or second best record in the league. If that happens, I feel like you're going to be looking for someone from that team to push.
Right.
So he'd be on my list. So that him and KD, I had Jokic on my list.
Yo, I like that. So, I mean, I picked him as my repeat guy before the season. So I like that you have Jokic on there.
Okay, yeah. Talk. And it's weird because I wrote, I think I was probably one of the first people in the media to really write up a case for him last year.
That's right.
It was still at that awkward time where, you know, people were saying Embiid should be the MVP or LeBron should be the MVP. And then both of those two guys got hurt. And so everybody was like, oh, I guess Jokic then, fine. And it was like, no, it's not the sort of case he's putting together. Like, he's just legitimately maybe more dominant than everybody else. And I would have said, like, by far, at the time, he was ahead of everybody by so much because of the games he played and how many games he played in. And also just, like, how depleted his team was, that Jamal Murray had either missed time or, in some cases, he was playing. But he was playing, like, ass for the first part of the season.
Yeah.
And Michael Porter missed, I think, 10 games or whatever it was with, with COVID or whatever. So, like, the two guys that you were really going to lean on. And then Will Barton, I can't remember when he started missing
time. Yeah, late in the year. He was out,
Jokic had no help on that team, basically, for a long time. And
truly
was
a platinum averaging with no features situation. Yeah.
He was averaging a triple-double for the first 15 games of the year just to keep them in it, keep them around 500, and then took off once the team started to get a little bit more healthy. And so he kind of looks like he's doing the same thing now, except there's literally no Murray at all. Like, his numbers are still insane. Last year he was leading them in most categories.
Yeah.
There was a tweet that somebody
every
put out there.
Every single category.
He's leading them in every single category, which I think someone was saying has never either hasn't been done in Nuggets history or hasn't been done in, like, recent NBA history at all, which, like, isn't a good thing because I think that Michael Malone went into the year saying he wanted to find a way to get Jokic more rest, and it's like they're leaning on him even more heavily because Porter's been really bad.
Yeah, I mean,
to
his
start
plus
the
minus is ridiculous. Their bench is awful. I mean, their bench comes in and blows any lead that he's built up. The pressure on him is really insane. That's a really good one to have.
So I'll pick him, even though I know the team's record isn't there, but it really wasn't this time last year either. So him, and then the other guys I had on my list were Giannis and Steph. Not again, this isn't in any particular order. But, I mean, the Warriors have the best record in the league. Steph is another one of those cases where, like, statistically, he's had better years than this. But if the Warriors are anywhere near first place, particularly if they're in first place, I think there's going to be a big push for him to win the award. And I think he'll deserve it, you know, if they do that. And this is without them even having Klay back yet.
Yeah.
So they've also been really good on defense, which I think helps the case, too, where he may not need to score as much, depending on what pace they're playing at or anything like that. So him, and then Giannis statistically is not terribly far off from what
Giannis
he's done
there,
each of the last 3 years. It's just the Bucks not
team
looking
success,
great.
But and the injuries,
So, I mean, it's, you know, they've been really banged up, and Giannis has had to do more of it by himself. But I mean, this is kind of how the case started last year, too, where, like, everybody wrote him off. And statistically, he's pretty much become a metronome the last couple of years, statistically. So he's going to be there in that conversation. It's more a question of whether or not there's fatigue.
Exactly.
From that standpoint of him always being in that conversation in the Bucks.
He set the bar so high for himself, and their team did. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. But those are the guys I'd have. Gobert, I think, is an interesting one where he's always going to be in the
I'm
analytics
always
darling
the Jazz.
Of that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why he's near the bottom of my ballot. Here, can you settle a debate for me, actually?
Sure.
Debate that Mike and I had. Which team do you think is more dangerous, the Warriors or the Jazz?
Um, I think it's probably the Warriors, but only because, I mean, and I picked the Jazz to win the whole thing. So, or not to win it, but to get there to the finals. I don't know who I picked to win. I can't even remember. I think I said the Bucks I picked to win. I'll say the Warriors are more dangerous just because I kind of feel like there might be this thought process that the Warriors are going to have some younger guys in their rotation. The Warriors are going to have some guys that haven't been there before, even Wiggins and people like that. The Warriors are going to take time to kind of get back on track as far as like reincorporating Klay. If Klay's not there, do you still believe in them to win the whole thing? You know, how real is Poole going to be on that stage? So I think they aren't going to come out of nowhere and surprise people, but I also think their game-to-game plan, you can go in with a plan to stop Steph, but Steph can blow it up by just going around screens or just being in perpetual motion for a game. Whereas I think you know pretty much what you're getting from the Jazz. You know, so I'll say the Warriors just because I think they have more ways and like you can game plan for them all day long and still not really have it. And I think I'm also probably saying that because Orlando just beat the Jazz yesterday. So
okay, so I was right.
I'm going to say the Warriors.
I was right and Michael was wrong. Not surprising. yeah, I'm going to go ahead and take the team that's already number one in the conference without his second best player is more dangerous. All right, Chris, you mentioned Evan Mobley earlier as a guy you really enjoyed watching. I want to wrap up this podcast just talking about some of the players we've loved to see this season. I mean, Mobley was a great pick. He's already getting those KG comparisons on defense.
Crazy.
He's been outstanding. I want to throw in another guy into the mix here. He's someone who I tweeted about this the other day. I don't have a lot of regrets about our top 100 list, but this is a guy who I think I wish I had put higher and wish we had ranked higher ultimately. And that's Donovan Mitchell. I know I just threw Rudy Gobert on my ballot, but I think Mitchell has been really good the last few games, and he's really started to come on strong. He's just one of those guys. And, you know, we've talked about this a million times when we talk about our list, but, I mean, you switch him with Devin Booker. You switch him with Trae Young. I'm just curious what those teams would look like because he's just been so good, I think, to start this year. And sometimes he just has those moments where he – I mean, Jimmy Butler was guarding him in that Heat Jazz game Saturday night, which is a really good game, and two teams that like clearly cared a lot about winning, and you don't get that usually this early in the regular season. Like, Jimmy took the Donovan assignment from the jump, and Mitchell was not scared. He'd drive it, bam, on the rim, finish through contact over big men, pulling up for threes. He's been really, really good, and sometimes I wonder if he's even a little underappreciated.
He might be. It's funny, like, we were putting these lists together. I mean, I picked the Jazz to get to the finals. You know, I've said that I think they should be favored out of the West just because, I haven't been a big believer in the Lakers this year. You know, I didn't have a reason to not necessarily pick the Suns. But to me, it's just kind of like the Jazz. I think a lot of times when teams hang around, particularly when they're like a one seed from the year before, they tend to kind of get disrespected in that conversation. Quite frankly, I think that's happened with the Sixers this year too. Like, it's bizarre to me that the Sixers just aren't playing on Christmas. I was venting about that Friday. I vented about it before when the schedule came out. And I think the same thing happens where there gets to be a fatigue with that too, where like if you keep essentially getting on the pot and then not letting anything go, that people are like, all right, you're just kind of messing with me, so screw it. I mean, the Jazz are... It's not easy to be the number one seed in any conference, let alone that one. So I feel like I'm like looking for a reason to kind of propel someone into that conversation. Realistically, I know Gobert is probably not. If you told me he's never going to finish top three on an MVP ballot, I would believe you just because I kind of feel like the line is drawn in the sand with how people feel about him. He is an incredibly valuable player in a way that's not the most traditional. People make fun of the screen assists and everything else and the screening numbers. They make fun of the, you know, the points saved.
Let's just say this. People don't make fun of the screen assists. They make fun of that one dude who tweeted he had a triple-double if you include screen assists, which was one of the most unhinged NBA tweets of all time. I have a DM thread with Andrew Sharp that's just me sending him bad NBA stats. And usually it's like, so-and-so is the first player since 2010-11 to shoot over 60% on Sunday. It's like usually it's tweets like that. But the screen assist one was in its own Hall of Fame bad NBA stats tweets.
All right. Well, I feel like you do have that wing of basketball covers that, like, when you look through all our fancy stats, he leads all of them. And so I get that there's going to be an urge for certain people to see him actually get votes for MVP. And I think that there's always going to be this conversation about, people say it almost like determines your personality or the way you watch basketball. Mm-hmm. Who's the Jazz's, you know,
best player?
Jazz. Yeah, the best player. And is your answer Gobert or is it Donovan Mitchell? And like, it could go either way. And like, I try to be down the middle on that one because I'm like, I don't feel like having this argument with you.
Right.
But I mean, it's essentially that Mitchell, you need to have a player like Mitchell for the playoffs. And you need to have a defender like Gobert, who I think probably does help you more in the regular season, but you also want somebody like him in the playoffs too. So Mitchell, I feel like he's the, he could be your go-between for something like that, where like, I don't think Gobert's ever going to win an MVP, but if it reaches a point where the Jazz win 68 games in a season, which I don't think this will be that year, but if they ever do that, people are going to say, okay, well, they're winning so much more than everybody else. Nobody else is having such a runaway season, so we got to pick someone from that team. He would be the guy, but I always struggle whenever I look at his numbers.
Right.
Because the numbers always look kind of the same as the year before. He's a volume shooter that is not the most efficient guy, but he also pops when you watch him on, in games.
That's and the thing. So he just is fun to watch. He's also just really fun to watch. Like,
he's really fun to watch. He's really good. Hell, I like watching the dude's brother, too. I like watching them play against each other. It's just a fun player, but like, for me, it's tough because I can never really slot him into like a top five. And I felt like you were starting to see his name last season because the Jazz were they weren't running away with the one seed, but they were going to win the one seed. And it was like, we don't really want to pick Jokic. And I don't really want to have to be forced to watch Denver and act like I do. So let me, you know, Donovan Mitchell's like a flashy scorer from the Jazz. I'll pick him. Like that there was starting to be some of that conversation on the first take sort of shows. And I'm like, y'all don't really think he's the MVP either. Like, let's be honest. And I didn't. So, So it's tough for me. I don't know that I would put either guy in the top five, but I recognize the idea that some people are going to think that they deserve there just based on how well Utah's been playing the last couple of years.
So I think we're really close to running out of time here, Chris, but I wanted to, I know that we both had, you know, a few players. So just give me a couple more guys that you really enjoyed watching
I'll go through quick ones. There I've got go. One player and then I've got like a trio of players that are all from the same team.
There we go. You.
Furkan Korkmaz has been like not a name I thought I would ever spend real time talking about on this podcast ever. But I saw a stat yesterday. It was actually one of my former students, Lauren Rosen, who writes for the Sixers site. And she said that this man is second in the NBA in fourth quarter scoring behind DeMar DeRozan only. Like, what? Like,
Sixers have been good. Six-game winning streak. And, I think they got a closing group with Korkmaz in there.
Completely insane. He's been handling the ball a decent amount more this year, like basically twice as much as he did last year. His assist rate is way up. He's not that far off from like 50, 40, 90, which, again, it's obviously really early. It's just kind of insane. Like, I didn't think that he had as many of the ball handling chops as he does, which helps them in a year where they're trying to figure out how to move on from Simmons. Obviously, other guys, Seth Curry has been amazing for them. But, you know, and I think that they've won every game that Maxey's played in. Shake Milton has played in. So other guys have thrived, you know, handling the ball as well. But that one is one I did not see coming. He's been in the league for a while. He was there. I think he was there during the process. He's one of the only other guys they've had that they still have from that period. So it's been really interesting to see that happen. I did not see it happening. So he's one. You want me to give you the other?
Go ahead.
The other is a trio of guys from the Orlando Magic. So Cole Anthony, Mo Bamba, and Wendell Carter all have made like massive jumps.
Just go ahead and throw Franz Wagner in there too.
Wagner's my guy as far as like being from Michigan. And I did not expect all this from him. So, I mean, you could throw him in there easily. And it's funny that you throw him in there because I'll give you this one. You take their starting lineup.
They might have the best starting five in the league, net rating wise.
Bing bong.
Yeah.
Plus 18.1 per 100 possessions in 125 minutes, which is the best in the NBA for any Nuts. Lineup that has played more than 50 minutes.
Nuts.
Which tells you that how ass their bench must be. Yeah. Oh, that they're winning by 18 per 100 possessions and that they still are only whatever they are. Was it 3-7 at this point? Or no, I just said that they played 11 games. So, I mean, they're bad, but their starting five plays really hard. They're all shooting well. All of them can shoot. The Wendell Carter that we're seeing is like, this is the version that Bulls fans wanted to see. Mo Bamba is playing way better. And Cole Anthony, who looked real, real, real rough as a rookie, just went off. I mean, he was a game time decision and then went off for like 33 against Utah yesterday.
All interview first team. Hitting everything. Yeah, all interview first team. Cole Anthony.
Facts.
Mo Bamba wants that second contract. Franz Wagner wants the smoke. He's mixing it up. The Magic are fun. Those are all great picks. I'll throw a few more players into the mix myself. How about Lonzo Ball? Like, you know, the Bulls, they were this source of consternation during the offseason after they got signed DeMar. And I think people kind of forgot about, like, Lonzo has turned himself into such a good player. He's a great floor spacer. And he gives you, like, a rhythm. He just gives you, like, a fun – I love guys like him on offense who kind of stay out of the way but make you go at the same time. I mean, he's such an overqualified glue guy. And I'm just going to say, he does all of it with the big fro. That, to me, is always – I want to see that. I want to see that when I'm watching basketball. It's just cool. I don't know what else you want me to say. It just is objectively very cool. As someone who loved NBA Street Volume 2, like, yeah, I'm pro. Great to see Lonzo Ball out there. I think he's been really, really killing it. Another thing I want to mention is just Paul George. The Clippers have had such a weird season. Yeah.
Whew.
And I think he's at like something like 28-7-5 right now or something. His stats are ridiculous. And, you know, the Clippers, I think they started off with those first couple games. You're like, this team looks like they could be really good. They lost a bunch in a row. And I think now they're back up around 500. And he's just been kind of spectacular. A number one option in the way that every team wants their superstar number one option to be. I still am unclear what this team's ceiling is. They've been so up and down, but they're on a little bit of a hot streak lately. But Paul George, man, I just think that he is he's flying under the radar right now because he's been kind of every bit as good as kind of the great players in the league. I think he's been awesome. He's been really fun to watch.
He has a nasty stretch like this every year. Yeah. Like for like the last 4 or 5 years, at least, maybe longer. And then sometimes there's always that period in the playoffs where you're like, but I don't know. Like, it's so weird that so many people kind of feel like they could go to the finals anyway with this roster. Certainly you feel better about it if Kawhi is back. You know, like, what is their ceiling? What is their floor? Will they make the playoffs if Kawhi doesn't come back? So for me, I maybe just because I'm trying to be in fun mode this year, and I'm sitting there watching a lot of Houston and a lot of Orlando and a lot of Cleveland. I'm fine with it if the Clippers are just fun, but it's really fun to watch Paul George's ball out. I think he's leading the league in defensive win shares as well. Oh, wow. He's doing it on both ends, which he always does. But I also think I've just become a fan of watching guys have to be in a spot where they have to do it on their own. Like Steph, it's really fun to watch
it's
that.
Fun.
I mean, I would love for Clay to be there. But it's really entertaining when these guys have it on their shoulders.
The irony of KD's career to go from the Warrior situation to the Nets one, and now he's the Harden's not Harden, Kyrie's not even there. He's been awesome. Can I throw one more curveball at you?
Sure.
It's not a player. It's a coach. It's Nick Nurse, who's just in his bag in Toronto right now, throwing out these funky lineups, like letting Precious Achiuwa dribble. they also, after a slow start to the season, have really turned it on. They have a great lineup going. They have so much kind of – I love the way they've built the team and that I think it's, like, perfect for the modern NBA, their length on the wing and their switchability, et cetera. They've been really fun to watch. Van Vliet, Anunoby, Scotty Barnes, man. What a steal Scotty Barnes has been.
How much better does that pick look for right now, at least? And it's weird. We were talking about how good Orlando's starting lineup is. The only guy that's not performing well is Suggs, but Suggs is, like, rough. Like, they're plus 18 per 100 possessions with him shooting, like, 30-some percent. Right. And meanwhile, you know, Scotty Barnes. Now, again, he did get his lunch – taken from him yesterday by Durant and everything, but a lot of guys are going to go through that. But he yeah. looks the part. He certainly looks the part, and he fits that team like a glove with all the length they've got.
So, yeah, that's a big one. And they don't even have Siakam yet. I think once they get Siakam back, they have a chance to be really, really good.
They got him back yesterday.
Oh, he played yesterday? Oh, man, I still need to catch up first on yesterday's game back. Games. We're talking about great lineups. Man, I completely missed those games yesterday. I gotta catch up on Siakam's debut. But we talk about great lineups. I'm looking at my phone because I want to bring this up. Van Vliet, Ananobi, Trent, Achiuwa, and Barnes, 13.6 net rating in 125 minutes. I think they're right up there with the Magic in terms of great lineups. Yeah, yep. now that Siakam's back, I think that they're going to be interesting.
Gonna be fun, man. Yeah. I said this to Michael a little bit Friday, like, and I don't even think we said it on the pod, but I wish there's certain things. I wish I never like published my predictions anywhere as far as like where I think teams will be seated. But mm-hmm. I was really loud about it on this podcast, and I was really loud about it in some of the stories I wrote. I really felt good about the Bulls. I really felt pretty good about the Knicks. And it's like, I know they've struggled a little bit mm-hmm. lately, but them, I think most people felt pretty good about the Wizards. I wasn't as high on them, but I felt like they would potentially make the playoffs. And my dark horse for just a team that like people were counting out that I thought would be really good this year was Toronto. And I didn't really put my foot all the way down with any of these, maybe other than Chicago. But I wish I had, because most of them look really, yeah. really smart. I remember at one point, you know, you gotta go way back, I told Mike, I was like, man, we'll have to see if Boston can make the playoffs. And Michael was like, what? So that might have been a little strong, yeah. but like maybe something in my mind was telling me yeah. that, like, you know, maybe Tatum and Brown are going to be shooting too much and Marcus Smart
yeah.
is going to call them out.
Maybe
I should have just yeah. stuck to my guns.
Yeah, maybe the Celts can turn around if they trade for Ben Simmons. Chris, I think that'll do it for us today. I think we really just kind of burned this candle on both ends here. This was a great pod. Thank you so much to our listeners for joining us on this journey, Chris. It was a lot of fun to hang with you, my man. To all our listeners, continue to stay safe. Michael is just on assignment today. Don't worry, he's fine. I think he needed some personal time after seeing those rumors this morning. But he will be back later this week. Make sure those emails keep coming in at openfloormail@gmail.com. We'll talk to you soon.